from executive producer Jimmy Kimmel.
What's up, team? Just two people can't launch a brand. It takes a village.
We are MMD Hollywood.
Wowee.
Which stands for medical marijuana.
Due to restrictions, we can't tell you everything about our new reality series. But what we can say is the idea behind it is fully baked.
I don't know.
High Hopes. Streaming on Hulu.
It's rivalry week in New Orleans. Me and Deuce are revved up today. We got Falcons week 2 days away from the Atlanta Falcons. And I know this from being a player here. The city gets excited to play Atlanta. And I kind of, you know, as a player, you're excited to play most people. But you can't help it in a city like New Orleans. It's such a small town. You're going to have 30 people walk up to you as a player and say, you better beat the Falcons. You almost get ultimatums as a player this week, and made me go back a little bit, something that I'd never really done before as a player, and just kind of looked in a little bit to this rivalry and what makes it and what caused it and where did it all start. And so we're going to talk about that a little bit. We've also got former Saint and a great all-time teammate of mine, Roman Harper, coming in to talk to us tonight a little bit. We're going to talk to Roman about Saints football and a little bit about Daddy Daycare. It's my favorite thing that Roman's doing right now. He's my favorite follow on Instagram because of Daddy Daycare. I think it's hysterical. We've also got a couple more guests talking Saints, LSU, and we've got a big night tonight. And Deuce, I look into the rivalry a little bit, right? And I know New Orleans and Atlanta. I'm not from New Orleans, so maybe for everyone else in the world, this is known, but it sure wasn't for me. But two franchises came into the NFL a year apart from each other, the Falcons in 66 and the Saints in 67. They both get thrown into the NFC West, which makes no sense. They're both east of the Mississippi River, but I guess get in where you fit in. And so they come into the league, and to be honest with you, it's basically an exercise in futility for about 5 years. First five seasons, the Saints go 18-48-1. The Falcons go 16-51. So it's not it's one of those things. It's like, well, I'm not sure if it was started then. It's taken some time. 98 games have been played since then. But when you look at it now, these are two teams that every year the past really 13 years have been in the conversation for winning this division and playoff contenders. And I think as the play has been elevated, as has the rivalry. And it's a big one, and it's always an exciting week in New Orleans.
So when you say it's just been a rivalry of futility, particularly the first 5 years, you just really want to say they were terrible, both franchises.
They were terrible. Okay, now they were. Listen, they were new franchises. So
they were still terrible. Just because you're a new franchise, don't
but
mean
they were terrible.
They were terrible.
And they've both experienced long periods of futility in their histories. But fortunately for all of us involved, neither one of us are in one of those right now. And both of these teams have aspirations. Both teams were playoff teams last year. Both teams had excellent seasons. They both feature tremendous quarterbacks. I did look into a lot of.
So you're going to talk all about the good stuff that they got and none of the bad?
You're starting me out already. Deuce, we're 3 minutes into the show. You want to talk about negative stuff already?
Yeah, we got to get the negative out of the way, and then we can go to some of the positive things and going on and happening in the world.
What do you got that's negative right now with the Saints?
Roman Harper was a teammate of mine, too. He was a teammate of yours for longer, but he was a teammate of mine, too.
Right, but why is that? That's not negative.
I didn't like how you phrased the guest that was coming in.
You don't like how I phrased Roman's? Listen, he's an all-timer. One of my all-time favorite teammates, and I think one of the best guys on air that I've ever been around. He's hysterical.
Yeah, he a tide. So I mean, the tide.
That's what it is.
I don't want to talk
to him. It all comes out. We've got an Alabama alum on. It's going to come and talk to us. And Deuce is disappointed about it because it was a rough week last week.
I don't think necessarily disappointed is the right word. I mean, it was probably what you
ashamed.
Expected. But, you know, I still don't have to talk to him or want to talk to him. But I think when you look at just – this has probably been the calmest of these two franchises when you look at the rivalry. There hadn't been as much trash talk,
Right.
There hadn't been as, you know, many little signals sent to each other. You know, we can reference the 28-3.
We can reference that whenever we want to in New Orleans, Deuce.
The nun choke signal motion.
Right. Yeah.
The egging of the bus.
Right.
So there's been some back and forth, but both of these teams have played nice. Now, I don't know if that'll be the case come 1 o'clock Sunday afternoon, but up to this point, both of these teams hadn't really said anything. You know, hadn't. Maybe it's early in the season and both franchises are 1-1.
I think neither team feels comfortable enough right now to be doing that. I don't think either one of them feel all that great right now. You look for the Saints, you have a loss week one to a divisional opponent in the Bucs, and then in week two you win a game that you walk out and you go, we won, I'm glad we won, but that didn't feel real good. So nothing's coming out of the Saints locker room. And you look across, you know, to Atlanta, and all you really hear from them is disappointment at how they're injured.
They are hurt.
They are hurt, and they do like talking about it, Deuce.
Right. Right. So if that's the excuse and the line that they're going to use, I'm fine with it too.
That's right.
If it gets you another loss, then oh well.
Right. And we'll get into some of those, and I think it's certainly worth looking into.
Well, the final with the final injury report being out.
Yeah, and there was a couple today that have been, and we might as well just throw them out cuz we're talking about it now, but they announced today Devonta Freeman is out. That was expected. Obviously, they're already down Deion Jones and Keanu Neal from early in the season, both on IR. But Tack McKinley has been ruled out for this game. Derek Shelby, a rotational defensive lineman, and also linebacker Corey Nelson. And the Saints have declared out Manti Te'o and Tyler Davidson. So
yeah, and also their right guard, because Garland.
LaVitre
is out as
He is also on IR now, so. They're a little bit banged up, and I think when you look at it, you know, they're defensively, they're two most dynamic defensive players, in my opinion. They lost already in the season. And
correct.
When you look at the Saints and the matchup with a player like Kamara,
yeah,
those two guys were the guys that were put and tasked on dealing with Alvin Kamara, and I think they did it better than any duo in the NFL.
Well, it's their ability to cover in space. And then, obviously, you know, you go back and you look at the game last year in Atlanta, it was actually Neal who had the high hit to knock Kamara out of the game. So he doesn't get an opportunity to play against him this year. But when you look at it, I'm interested to see how they still try to play him. And then what do they do to try to generate a pass rush? We know about Grady Jarrett in the middle, who could be a monster. I mean, but where else do they get a pass rush?
I mean, and really, you know, you'd like to say Vic Beasley if you're a Falcons fan, but he hasn't been productive yet this year. He doesn't have any sacks on the season, just one tackle. Grady Jarrett's been really tremendous. He was fantastic last week, had three quarterback hits, had five tackles. Last week, he leads the NFL for defensive tackles and total stops. He's a productive player. I think, you know, the Super Bowl was really his coming out party.
Right.
That was the Super Bowl that the Falcons gave up a 28-3 lead, which we won't mention, but four or five more times before we get off the air tonight. But and then you look at Tack McKinley, who was a rookie last year, came into Atlanta, was really productive, had six sacks as a rookie. That's a big loss for them. He had a sack versus Carolina, a couple tackles, really has been more productive than Vic Beasley has, and Vic seems to kind of have had his one
year.
Big season. Yeah, this year seems to have had his one big season, and to be honest with you, having played Vic Beasley, I think he's a guy.
Yeah, he's a speed guy.
He's a speed guy that is going to necessitate 20-point leads to become as productive as he was, and that's essentially what happened that year. They were putting up so many points on teams. He was rushing constantly, and there's a lot of guys that are a lot better with 20-point leads on the edge, and maybe none more so than Vic Beasley. So, you know, I it's interesting, and I wonder, the pass rush is always big when you're on the road. It's always important when you're in a hostile environment. It's your biggest advantage as a defensive team playing at home is can the other team get off on the snap, which is something I'd like to talk about a little bit later in the show, and how different is it for an offense to operate in those types of conditions. But I think that's something that you're going to have to – we're going to have to wait and see, are they going to find a way to do that. Stick with us here. Deuce and Zach, fans and the pros. We'll be here until 7 o'clock. Got a great show tonight. Roman Harper coming in a little bit. We're talking Saints-Falcons. You're listening to WWL. Welcome back to Fans and Pros. I'm Zach Streif here with Deuce McAllister. And our WWL Blue Runner Foods opinion poll named the one problem – the Saints have that you'd fix for the Falcons game, pass defense, running game, or return game. Call 504-260-1870, text 870-870. And also, I want everyone to call in that's got a favorite memory from a Saints-Falcons rivalry game. Share it with us. Talk to me and Deuce. I know me and Deuce have certainly one that'll stick out to both of us, but a couple of good memories from this rivalry, and that's really what it's all about. It's a game you play these teams every year, twice a year, and you know, you build a history with them.
You definitely build a history. And, Zach, I want to make a correction, I guess, in the last segment. It was Neil had the hit on Willie Snead.
Right.
Deion Jones had the hit on Alvin Kamara. On Alvin Kamara. Deion Jones had that hit, and it was Canoe Neil, that had the hit on Willie Snead.
And certainly, I mean, it speaks to it. Those are, I think, again, they're two best defensive players both out. And not that it affected them last week. They go get a win at home against Carolina. But it's obviously still something to keep our eyes on for sure, Deuce.
Well, it's going to affect your depth at some point. You can't continue to try to replace starters and not have it affect you in some manner, whether it's how you run certain plays, whether it's how you run certain coverages. At some point, you know, the players that you're replacing are not going to be as good as the players that are stepping in. The mentality is always next man up, but how big of a difference as far as the talent gap is it between those two players?
Absolutely. We're going to go to the phones. This is Fans and Pros, so we're going to check in with the fans. We have Gary. Gary, how are we doing, buddy?
Pretty good, yourself?
Doing well. What do you got for us?
I have a question. Like, if an offensive team scores a touchdown and the defense commits a personal foul in the end zone,
yep.
Okay, then the penalty is set off on the kickoff. So actually that's penalizing the kicking team and not the receiving team.
I believe,
don't they mark it off after the team – receives the ball and then apply the penalty on their offense?
Can you choose, Deuce? Because you can choose whether you use it on the extra point or on the kickoff. I would think anymore, most teams, a personal foul on a touchdown would use it on the extra point. It makes the extra point 47 yards, 48 yards. So,
No. On the extra point, it will make it closer. If it's against the defense, they're going to make it closer. Most put it on the kickoff, so now they're closer. So instead of kicking it from the 35,
the question.
So the penalty was on the defense. The penalty was 15 yards after the play, 15 yard on the defense. Do you want to penalize them on the extra point, or do you want to on the kickoff? So he's saying that they're not punishing the defense enough, and once they have possession of the football, he wants them to punish them then. Is that correct? Yeah, and so normally what you see a team that has a really good kicker, he's going to pop kick it, and he's going to try to pin him. It does no good to try to kick it through the end zone because you're already 15 yard closer.
Right.
I don't know. It's one of those things. It's a loophole in the system, but I will tell you this. The guy who gets the personal foul anymore could very well find himself with an envelope in his locker on Tuesday, and that's unpleasant at least, Deuce.
No doubt about that.
We appreciate the call, Gary. We're going to go to Matt on the North Shore.
Yeah, I was going to say the best Falcons moment I can recall. I was in the Dome 2006. I think Deuce might have been there. The punt block, which set it all.
Yep,
Michael Vick was playing for the Falcons. That had to be the best moment ever against the Falcons, I believe.
That was the first game that I ever saw in the Superdome. That was my first game as a Saint.
That was my first game, actually, as a season ticket holder back then, and it was phenomenal.
That was a good choice, and I guess it's something we are going to talk about, Deuce, when we come back. We got a break coming up, but that to me was a moment that was, it was not just football.
No.
It wasn't even close to just football. It was everything else. And, yeah, it was a great moment, I think, certainly in the Saints rivalry and or the Falcons rivalry. But for everyone, we're going to take a break real quick. You're listening to WWL. Fans and the pros, here's Zach Strief, along with Deuce McAllister. Our WWL Blue Runner Foods opinion poll. Name the one problem the Saints have you'd fix for the Falcons game. Pass defense, running game, return game. Call 504-260-1870, text 870-870. Let us know what you think about that. And I think we've got a little bit of confirmation here, or at least help, because, again, I'm not from New Orleans, on the rivalry and the 1978 game, I believe, here. We're going to go to Renee. Renee, how you doing?
Yeah, listen, that was the year, I think, and I know that both games we lost on Hail Mary passes at the very final play. I think for them, Steve Bartkowski was the QB, and I don't remember who it was for the Saints. Maybe you can do some research and let us know, and I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Absolutely, and thank you for the call. So, yes, we will look up who the quarterback was, but it was 1978. The Falcons beat the Saints twice in 3 weeks, both on Hail Marys at the ends of games. And, man, that is brutal. But that's kind of the linchpin for this really getting bad. And they called it the Big Ben and the Big Ben 2, those two Hail Mary throws. So that'll do it, Deuce. I mean, that'll rev a fan base up.
It definitely will. And you talking about living right, they were living right to catch not just one Hail Mary pass, but two Hail Mary passes, all within a 3 week time span as well, huh?
Yes, they played twice in 3 weeks.
Wow. Hey, got an interesting text, and I'm gonna let you answer both of them.
Okay.
Can y'all explain the envelope in the locker room?
Yeah.
Thing.
So the envelope in the locker room. So. Lots of people read about players getting fined, and the thing that they don't ever talk about is that there must be an exclusive contract there with FedEx, because if you get fined, the league will send you a letter. It comes in an overnight FedEx envelope, and it's sitting in your locker. So you're very aware before you ever open up the envelope, particularly if you're a guy that just had a personal foul penalty, a late hit, any more, a basic tackle on any quarterback, that envelope inside is the league telling you how much that you've been fined. So that's the envelope thing.
The other way, also uniforms, violation.
Yep.
You get a warning, though, for a uniform.
Well, at least with the uniform, you know at the game that you're in trouble.
Yeah, you know before, either going into the game,
right,
I'm going to get a fine, or throughout the game, they have warned me two times, and I still won't do what they're telling me to do. Normally, it's the socks.
Yeah, well, and players will take those fines. There's the years of blackouts.
The blackouts.
Right, when you were wearing black pants, black jerseys, where players want to wear all black socks, and they know going in that's going to cost money. There's also the Lance Moore Christmas game, the red and green cleats.
Isn't that rule changed now, though?
Well, there's more leniency, certainly, with cleats now. There's cleats. More that you can do, yeah.
Yeah, so it used to be that you can only wear, if the team wore black cleats, everybody had to have on at least the majority black cleats. Now, obviously, they could have some white or gold or whatever accented color in that shoe. But if you were the only player that was wearing black cleats and everybody was in white, you were getting fined.
Yeah.
You were getting fined.
Yeah. And even that rule has changed. I mean, they're way more relaxed with cleats. I think the painting of the cleats for charity and all those things kind of helped everybody.
And the other one is with the pads. You still have to have some type of padding.
Yes.
For knee thigh pads.
Yes.
You don't have to wear hip pads.
Correct.
It just has to be the knee and the thigh. Even if it's just a little strip, you still have to have it in there.
Yes.
And
also finable.
That will get you fined.
Yes. The other question I assume that you were going to bring up was the question about duo.
Yeah.
And that is that's a play that I say way too much because I know it's not as commonly known or understood. So what's the difference between or understanding people know what a zone scheme is, most people know what power is, what's duo? Duo is kind of it's a single back gap scheme where there's no lead blocker and there's no puller. So if you kind of imagine a power play where nobody's pulling and it's just all double teams, that's basically what duo is. And it's a really what it really is it's a highly efficient play because you're not turning anyone loose and you're double teaming everyone along the front up to the linebackers. The Saints love it. Sean Payton loves it because it keeps them on schedule. A bad duo play, it's a gain of zero.
Yeah, because normally you've either had someone to split or the running back was dancing too much in the background. I mean, because duo, you're normally going to have three double teams. Normally, yes. It should be three double teams as far as double team blocks, where your guard and your tackle are working together, your center and your guard, and then the tackle and the tight end. They're normally going to be working, and it's single back, like you said. Right. And so when you see it, it's a very, very normally a productive play. I used to love running it. A guy that made a whole bunch of money running it was Anthony Thomas, A-Train,
yep,
up in Chicago. We stole it from them way back in the day. We didn't run it like they ran it, and we stole it from them how they loved to run it. And, you know, even when Sean had a little variation of it, but, you know, we still ran it a lot.
Yeah, and the Saints in the past few years have run it a lot. Mark Ingram is really excellent at it. And if to identify it as a fan, when you see two tight ends to one side, you see a really vertical handoff inside really tight, and then a running back that really bounces outside, he's really reading the Mike linebacker on the play.
Well, you got to make him wrong.
Exactly. And so the Mike can't be right. So if the Mike stays inside, that play is going to bounce. And if the Mike is going to play the outside, then that play hits inside. So it's been really effective for the Saints. A good question. I know it's something that I say too much because – I don't always have time to explain it.
Like, yeah, well, you see it right away, and some of the fan base knows what it. I mean, but it's if you want to get technical, it's still inside zone. At times, it could be outside zone, but that's going to be more of a stretch. But if you're just being technical, it's inside zone. That's the family that you would marry it to. And one of the questions does Cam Newton get fined for his custom cleats? He does not get fined for his custom cleats. Pre-game, you can do what you want to do, but pre-game is when they're going to tell you, hey, look, those cleats or those socks aren't high enough. You need to put some more thigh pads in, or you need to put some knee pads in. Pre-game is when they tell you that you're about to get fined. Once the game starts and you didn't change it, then you'll get fined. But if something happens during the game for the first half, they may only give you a warning. And if you come back out at halftime and you still have the same, you're going to get fine.
Also, just for general record, the money goes into charity. It also goes into the Players Trust, which is a fund to help retired players that are going through some hardship. So, Jeff, Elwin, Roy, we're going to get to you. You hang with us. This is Fans and the Pros. We got Roman Harper coming up. Way more talk about Saints and Falcons. Stick with us. You're listening to WWL. Fans and the Pros here on WWL. I'm Zach Streif, alongside my partner and former teammate and Saints Hall of Famer and all-time leading rusher.
Hey, go ahead. You a Hall of Famer, too. You need to cut it out.
Dwymus Deuce McAllister.
You need to cut it out.
I'm a Hall of Famer at Northwestern, which I'm proud of, but it's a little different, Deuce. It's a little bit different.
I mean, you just retired for the Saints. You have to be out a little while. You know that, right?
Listen, there'd have to be a lot of emotional healing done on my play as a Saints player to have that happen. We're going to go to the phones. I got a great one here. I've been waiting for it. Jeff and Ponchatoula got a question for Deuce.
I want to speak to Deuce McAllister, please.
Yes, he's on the phone.
Jeff, he might take a break right quick. What you got, though? He can hear you.
Deuce, I wanted to ask you, I knew going into the season that Ole Miss might struggle just a little bit on defense, but I heard that we had a defensive back who was injured last week, and he could be out for the season. I mean, that's not going to help us much. And I wanted to see, first of all, if you could tell me what you look forward to seeing from the Rebel defense the rest of the year. And my second question, real quick, before I hang up, is do you think Joe Burrow can take LSU to where they want to go this year? And I'll hang up, Deuce.
Jeff, the DB you're talking about is Custis, and yes, he did tear his ACL, so that's back-to-back weeks. You lost Jalen Jones, another starting cornerback, and Custis was basically almost like your strong safety in that defense that they use because it's a 4-2-5 look. I don't know if the defense will get to where you want them to go, but I think that they're still on target, even by losing to Alabama the way that you did, I still think that you're on target to win six, possibly seven games. I mean, and I think that that was always realistic, a realistic number for this team. I mean, just because you had so much youth and you were playing junior college guys on that defense, you figured the offense would be or do well enough. And, you know, outside of Alabama game, that's what they did. You still can't turn the football over, but they lost. And it was going to take a perfect game.
They didn't lose.
Well, they got beat bad, very bad. But it was going to take a perfect game for them to be in that game. And, you know, once the confidence got going, that game got away from them. So from that standpoint, they're still in position to be 3-1 after this weekend. And then you have to come to LSU and you face Joe Burrow and a team that is playing very, very, very well. For him, he is going to have to continue to make the big throws, and that offensive line is going to have to continue to knock people off the ball. Because when they become one-dimensional, I think that's where teams will kind of, all right, what do you have? You know, because we know that you can run the ball and throw it, but can you do it when one is taken away? There are three games, three teams that they're going to have to really play well against. Mississippi State, Alabama. I would throw Florida in there, but not really Florida. It would probably be Georgia more so than anything. Those three games will tell the tale for LSU in their season. Now, you can't take A&M for granted. We don't really know what they have yet. We'll find out a little bit more. I don't know if you're going to find out anything tomorrow because they're matched up against the Tide. But, you know, they were very surprising against Clemson, A&M was. So, you know, we'll see.
And in Ole Miss's defense, and this is probably the last time I'll defend Ole Miss with you directly, Deuce, Nick Saban did say this week it's probably the most talented offense that he's ever had at Alabama.
He's got a quarterback that can run. He's got a quarterback that can run and throw the football.
He's got a whole squad that can run.
Yeah, but, I mean, his quarterback makes the difference. I don't think that they, in my opinion, and it doesn't mean a lot, but they don't have – I don't think that they have the elite tailback that they have had in years past. I like Damian Harris, but I don't think he is the elite tailback like, you know, the Mark Ingram, the Derrick Henrys, even kid that went to Dallas, Bo Scarborough. You know, I like him, but I don't think he is the elite guy like some of those other guys.
So you're saying Saban's lying to us?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I'm telling you.
Let's go to Roy in River Ridge. Thanks for hanging on to us, Roy. How you doing, man?
How y'all doing this evening? You know, I have a twofold part as it relates to the Saints and Falcons rivalry. I would say my most favorite part of the rivalry is in 2006, the first game to return to the Superdome. But there's one bitter moment that sticks out to me, and Deuce, I think you were on this team. This was in 2002 when Michael Vick came to the Dome for the first time. I believe late in the fourth quarter, you ran over a safety and got in the end zone for the lead. And so all we had to do was just hold the lead. But Michael Vick got the ball. He threw a bomb, and the receiver in the corner got tangled up, drew a PI penalty, and they kicked the game-winning field goal.
Yeah, I remember. Remember it very, very well.
That's
not
hard one to forget.
He's not bitter at all.
Nah, yeah, I remember it. Keon Carpenter was a safety and felt like that we scored too soon, which, you know, you never think that you score too soon, but that Michael Vick was able to just flick it and, you know, we get the PI and they go out and they win the game.
Yep. That's it.
All right. We appreciate the call, Elwin, and thanks for hanging with us. We're going to check in right now, get you where you got to go. Time to check in with traffic. You're listening to Fans and Pros here on WWO. Welcome back, Fans and Pros. Here on WWL, I'm Zach Streif with my partner, Deuce McAllister. Our WWL Blue Runner Foods opinion poll, and I think we'll dig into this in the 5 o'clock hour when we got Roman Harper coming in, and we're going to get into this Saints-Falcons game. Name the one problem the Saints have that you'd fix for the Falcons game, the pass defense, the running game, or the return game. Call us 504-260-1870, text 870-870. I also want to let everyone know next Friday, for all of our North Shore Saints fans, you can come meet up with me and Deuce, and we're going to do Fans and the Pros live from Rouse's Market in Covington. That's the Rouse's on Bootlegger Road and 1077. Make your plans to make groceries next Sunday for the Saints-Giants game and next Saturday's LSU-Ole Miss game at Rouse's in Covington, again on Bootlegger Road in Louisiana 1077. We'll be there next Friday from 4 to 7. Come stop by, say hi, talk Saints and Tigers football with us. I know me and Deuce would certainly love to meet you. And more Saints and Falcons talk when we come back in the next hour. And also, Roman Harper will be with us. You're listening to Fans and the Pros on WWL.
From executive producer Jimmy Kimmel.
What's up, team? Just two people can't launch a brand. It takes a village.
We are MMD Hollywood.
Wowee.
Which stands for medical marijuana.
Due to restrictions, we can't tell you everything about our new reality series. But what we can say is the idea behind it is fully baked.
I don't know.
High hopes. Streaming on Hulu.